Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, welcome to another book club. This week I'm very delighted to be joined by Richard Armitage, who's written a fantastic thriller called Geneva. Hello, Richard.
Hi, how are you?
Hello, Richard. It's nice to see another Richard. They're rare, which you look younger than you are, but it ages you, that Richard. That's a giveaway of your true age, Richard.
Thank you.
But look, this this isn't the kind of book I would usually read. I don't read many thrillers, but I really enjoyed this. I actually listened to the audiobook, which is where it started, right?
Yeah. Yeah, originally this was a commission from Audible, who I think they'd looked at a lot of the stories that I was reading of other authors and the type of work that I do as an actor. And they thought, oh, this would be a good combo, Armitage writing and reading a crime thriller. So they said, do you want to write something? And I was like, yeah, I'd love to. And then they went, of course you want a ghostwriter. I said, no, thanks. And then they got really scared and said, all right, send us a writing sample. And so we staggered it. But yeah, that's where it all started. And it was a thrilling adventure, really.
Yeah, well, it was writing. I mean, obviously you're well known as an actor. It was in your films and TV, but was writing. I know that when you've been acting, you create a character book and stuff and go delve into your character, which I think is clear from this. The characters are great and the depth of the character is really vivid. Was that your sort of starting point as a writer, working through your characters?
Yeah, a little bit of that, actually, and well researched, because, yeah, I did. I would always write quite an ongoing biography for each character. So I actually love pen on paper because, I don't know, there's something about that mental connection. And I would do a lot of free-flow writing that I knew no one was ever going to read. And I've kind of buried those books somewhere in lead in a vault somewhere that hopefully no one will ever find them. But yeah, it's really interesting when you start to do that process. I've also attempted to adapt other people's writing into a sort of proof of concept first episode screenplay. I've done that a few times, and again, it's never seen the light of day. But I think my doorway into acting came through literature anyway, from right back from when I was like a little 4-year-old. You know, I think that vivid imagination. I remember looking back thinking, I think that's the moment I became an actor. And it was always from literature. So as a reader and as an absorber of stories, it seems to sort of sit in the same box for me.
Yeah. It's terrific. It's a really well-written and very thrilling. It's pacey. There's we can't talk too much much about it because there's, I don't want to give anything away, but there's a lot of twists and turns, and you might be expecting some of them, but I don't think you'll expect all of them, and even the ones you're expecting might turn around and bite you in the bum. So it's a brilliantly tightly written piece. It covers a lot of ground as well. What was the influence for telling this particular story? And tell us what you would like to tell us about the story. So that,
you know, at the time when I was asked to write it, I mean, it was I'd been asked just as we were heading into the pandemic, and I'd been watching a lot of biographies and programs about Sarah Gilbert, who was heading up the AstraZeneca vaccine program for Oxford University. And I started to look into creating a narrative drama about her life because I thought, oh, how interesting, somebody with her gravity in this kind of world of panic that was happening. So then when the request came in to write this story, I thought, oh, well, I'll use somebody a bit like her as a sort of foundation stone, because I was just really interested in what would happen to somebody like that if you throw them into like a really taut, tense story, because she was so rational and level-headed. I thought that would be a really good tension. So she was the starting point, but also my love of kind of Hitchcock drama and espionage, and I love anything which is rooted in science fact or biotech. I love that world, so I thought, I'll just kind of do a mashup of all of those ideas.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot in there because it's about big pharma, it's about Alzheimer's disease is a big part of it. Are these things that you've had, you know, a lot of the detail of just things that happen, it feels like, has he been in a car crash? This description of a car crash is kind of phenomenally detailed. Are these things that have touched your life, or just things that you're interested in?
Yes, in many ways, like the Alzheimer's part of this story is really kind of me picking up anecdotes from friends and family who have experienced relatives with that condition. When I was out in New Zealand, I got to know Weta Digital, who did all of the CGI for the film of The Hobbit. And they were working with a company that called Magic Leap that create this augmented reality world. And I just became fascinated with what they're doing with AI and technology. I was watching quite closely what Elon Musk is doing with neural implants. And
yeah.
I just thought it's really interesting because it's done in the name of science and helping to rewire the brain. But at the same time, everyone is going to be leaping on it to get, you know, sort of mind control and data collection. And I just thought all of these things that I really enjoy falling down rabbit holes over, I just thought I'll make a big giant rabbit hole for myself to fall down.
Well, as I say,
I've been in a car accident like that, and the skiing accident is based on something that really happened to me.
Oh, is it? Yeah, because it's so vivid. I mean, I think, you know, I thought, oh, he's an actor and he'll have played parts and things and been through stuff. But I think, you know, it is interesting having, you know, I think you having your background, a lot of people don't like people changing lanes, right? And say, you know, if you're an actor, stay being an actor. And I'm not one of those people. I think, and especially with writing, I think writing is something, even for pleasure, everyone should be doing. And if you're good and you can get a book published, then that's all that matters. But the descriptions and the emotions in it are great. I think the characters are fabulous. The female characters are great. I do really love the character of Daniel, who's the husband, because I think it's just such a brilliant portrayal of a kind of weak, toxic man. And again, I don't want to say too much, but even at the start, you kind of go, this guy's, you know, it's because it's the chapters are as written by the characters, or many of them, and even through his own words, he sort of betrays his own jealousy and idiocy. And it's a really lovely, subtle, observed character. I think I really love it.
Yeah, I mean, I had to be nudged by Audible when I was writing because they kept saying, you've got to write Daniel in a more kind of equal way to the Sarah, Helen, and all the other characters, because I was allowing him to fade a little bit because I was more interested in the others. And they were like, we've commissioned this because we want you to read it. So I had to sort of readdress what his platform was. But yeah, I was just interested in somebody, an early version of Daniel and Sarah's relationship, where he'd been attracted to her brilliance and her kind of successful, whatever it is that brought them together suddenly, you know, as they've grown older and she's become, you know, she's reached the pinnacle of her career. She's won the Nobel Prize and he's never quite reached the heights of her achievements. And I think the thing he was attracted to has started to eat him up, and the passion turns to the desire to sabotage. And then that grows into a bigger plan. So because I think resentment has somehow formed, you know, that's not written from any firsthand experience, but I have seen that in relationships where you see the sort of degrading of what was once great because one partner is more successful than the other. And I think when that person is the male side of the relationship, I think it's quite hard to deal with because it's, you know, men are sort of expected to be the high flyers, but I just thought that would be an interesting dynamic to sort of tinker with.
It really is. I love you. You know, he's sort of obsessed with mentioning brands and things like that. There's just lots of lovely details that you think, oh, God, this guy, I hate this guy, even though, you know, to begin with, you don't know whether you're going to like him or hate him. But you go, yeah, I'm going to hate him. And I think that is, you know, it's so true. And it's such a weird thing to be in a relationship with someone and then just envy them rather than being delighted for a success. He feels diminished. And so he's trying to fill this hole within himself, unable to see what, you know, he's being doubly an idiot, as it turns out. Well,
yes. And also I think the fact that she probably knows how he feels and is doing everything she can to compensate for that. Like, I think that's one of the reasons why she retired early and why she didn't go and accept the Nobel Prize, because she didn't want to sort of rub salt into the wound of her husband. So she's probably taking care of his feelings whilst being brilliant, which is even worse, you know what I mean? Yes. There's almost this energy of pity between them. And I think it's those kind of intermarital dynamics are so interesting to play with. I mean, they're endless.
Yeah. But the female characters are terrific as well. And it's, you know, and I think, again, it feels like a rare thing where, there's two or three major characters that a female and very important, and they're not just, you know, as Sarah, obviously the Nobel Prize winning neurologist, is they're not just there as bits on the side for the guys. And there's a little bit of sex in it, but it's a bit weird, and you know, it's not the kind of sexy sex. It's a bit 50 Shades of Grey. Maybe, but it's not about sex, which is ostensibly, it's not about sex, which is, I think, really interesting as well, that the female characters are so strong and interesting and pass the Bechdel test, I suppose. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think because I was writing Sarah as someone that was having this crime done to her, I was really conscious that I didn't want her to be the victim of a big group of male characters afflicting the woman. So I figured I would make the viper of the story, you know, another strong female character with a sort of equal brilliance in what she does, in the character of Helen Alder as the PR consultant for the Schiller Institute. I mean, I think Helen probably turned out a little bit more black and white in terms of psychosis than I would have hoped for, but I'd written a much more detailed backstory for her, which in a way made us slightly soften and understand her a little bit more. But we sort of had to remove that in order to adhere to this sort of thriller template, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but you know, it's really interesting to hear that there's, you know, that you had all that extra background. But I'm impressed as a first, because writing a novel is so difficult. It's not something I've ever managed. I've had a couple of goes and not got, you know, very far. It's so complex, and yet this book really does hold together. And you know, I got through it again. Listen to the audiobook, which is in some senses easier, but I got through it in about a day and a half. So and you're returning to it because you want to find out what's going on. The last 20% of it is just action over action and surprise over surprise. It's kind of, you know, it's very well put together. So, but you know, that's you know, it's especially given that you know, it started off as them coming to you and saying, "Oh, we'll get someone else to write and put your name to it." It's very impressive to have achieved that with your first go, I think, you know, with your first novel.
I mean, thank you. I to be honest, if it had been print, there probably would have been a part of me that went, yeah, let someone else write it and I'll just slap my name on it. But because I was actually in a microphone speaking the words, I just because I did read every single word aloud because it was designed to be heard. And I just felt like if these aren't my words, I just won't be able to read the book.
Yes.
Authentically and, you know, with passion. I just thought this is, and because I was writing in first person, it was even more essential that what I was saying was really deeply coming from a place within me. But also, you know, what's really interesting is when I haven't quite finished the audiobook yet, but when I listened to what Nicola Walker and Jane Perry did with those characters, I did kind of think they're making it so much better than it really was on the page. Like, it sounded like these people really existed. They're real. And I take my hats off to both of them. But it's really lovely to write with that in mind, that these words are going to be spoken. And actually, I'm doing the same again with another book. And it's the same thing. I think because I've worked for Audible a lot, and before I start to record, I always think about just one person listening with headphones on in the dark, or, you know, on a journey, and I speak to them as one person. And that was a good way into this story, really.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, I'm a big fan of audiobooks, and if I can, I listen to most things on audiobooks. And that's what really, before I knew that you'd written it first as an audiobook, I had the book, and then I was away and I'd forgotten the book, and I thought, oh, it's on, I'll see when the audiobook's coming out, and it was out. And I just was immediately struck by how much better an audiobook it was than most audiobooks, because most audiobooks are fairly dry, a dry read of something, and this one, you know, there's production values in it, there's different voices in it, which is great. But it, yeah. I think that's really interesting that it's written to be read out, and that really pushes the story along, the drama along, and obviously, you know, you, yourself and the people you've got doing the audiobook are some fantastic actors, so it's that doesn't harm it. But that's a really, is the printed version exactly the same as the audio version, or have you made changes between the two?
Tiny changes. Yeah. Obviously some mistakes. I was making changes in the studio when I was recording it as well, yeah. Because I, you know, it's a little bit like music, you know, the balance of a line or a word that will pop as an unintended rhyme would just sort of jar on my ear. So I would make those adjustments. But also, you know, I think because I have read quite a lot of brilliant, brilliant crime thriller, and also in dialogue when I'm performing a role, you know, sometimes I think getting the vibe of when the action needs to start getting pacier, the word choices become much more monosyllabic, and if you throw in a massive word, it sort of will trip you up as you're driving towards, you know, the cliff edge, literally. So I loved that little calibration. It is like being a conductor of an orchestra. You know, you've got to be able to speak quick. It's a bit like trying to throw punches with more than two syllables. It's really fun to do.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I think increasingly as audiobooks are getting more popular, that, you know, it makes sense to write an audiobook rather than to write a novel, and it will work as both, of course. And I have read some of it in as a book, but and it does still work. But yeah, it absolutely makes sense to have to think of that as a different medium, which I think even if you're taking an existing written book, a lot of people don't bother to think about how to do the audiobook in an audiobook fashion. You know, it's just a read of it. And you do, the ones that are good really leap out, I have to say, but it is often very much down to the performer.
Yeah. I mean, even when I'm reading for pleasure, I read it out loud now because I find it, it's just habit. I like to know how the words sound. I even do the accents for the people. I've just been reading Sebastian Fogg's new book, and I'm kind of doing the American dialect and then sort of making one of these characters West Country because I don't know. It's how I shape in my head. And it's kind of a bridge from print to, you know, TV or film content. And I sort of love that middle ground of performance. You know, people say you're reading a book, but it's actually you're performing a book, which I really like. really yeah, like
you that. Should you should put the microphone on, record it, put the computer on. You might be able to send it off and, you know, be doing the audio. You're wasting it if you're doing that. You might as well record it and then just send it to Sebastian Falk, say, do you want to use this? Because they, you know, they probably, it'd be nice to have Richard Armitage reading all my books to me. But maybe let me know when you're reading them and I'll just come and sit outside your window and listen to you.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I mean, it does feel, I mean, you know, you were very good as Daniel, and it does feel like this would be a terrific movie. Is that something that's in the pipeline? I'm sure you've thought about it. If not,
funny you should say that. None of these things, like even the print version, was a bit of a pipe dream. So when Faber listened to it and said, "We love this story and we're going to print, we'd love to print it," I was just like, "Wow, that's a kind of delightful surprise I wasn't expecting." And then, of course, the next stage is that, you know, my literary agent then sort of scouts the book out to TV production companies, and Sony picked up the option. So I am going to develop it with them for either TV or film. I suspect TV, and I will have to play Daniel. So I've sort of set a rod for my own back, really. I've made him so despicable, and I've written scenes that I wouldn't possibly want to act in. And now I'm going to be forced to do it. I'm going to have that ski accident on a mountain.
Yeah, ski accident, car crashes.
Yeah.
Horrible, some perverted sex you're going to have to have.
Perverted sex.
So good. Yeah, I'm glad. Like, I'm glad that's going to happen. But that's sort of so, and it's interesting as I've written things that I've performed in and written things that I haven't performed in. And it is interesting how you, even if you know you're going to play something, you don't, as a writer, you don't really think about it. I wrote a play where my character ended up taking all his clothes off and behaving in a bad fashion for a stage. And then when I came to be, knowing I was going to play, and when I was the actor, I was going, do we really need to do this horrible thing? So it's really weird how you disassociate yourself when you're writing, because I guess if you didn't, you would think, do I want this to happen? Do I want a mouthful of glass at this point?
Totally. And actually, even on a serious note, even when the performance aspect of it comes, you know, it's not really you, is it? It's the character you've created, sure. So you've got to honor it.
Yeah.
But no, it's a really interesting journey that this story's going on. And to be honest, I'm not quite finished with the characters either. So I've penned a treatment for a follow-up book, because I'd like to see Sarah kind of with her hands on the steering wheel a little bit more, whether that makes it into a book or whether it, you know, is a season two of a first season of a TV show. I don't know yet, but it's funny how the characters continue to live beyond the story once you've created them.
Yeah, I did think that. It did feel like this could be, you know, there's definitely more to be had from these characters. And when you were writing, obviously you're a very busy actor and you're working a lot. So how did you find the time? Was it just a downtime in your Winnebago that you were writing this, or did you?
I wrote the first few chapters in a Winnebago on the set of Stay Close, and then I was writing at weekends when I did a film in Spain called The Man from Rome. So I was writing in hotel rooms in Seville and Madrid and then Rome, and then lots of long haul flights through the night backwards and forwards. I actually finished some of the final edits while I was writing Obsession, which is why probably one of the sex scenes took a certain sudden quality to it, because I think I was being influenced by a lot of the work that I was doing in a very abstract way, you know, but I quite like that. I like, you know, when your creative floodgates are open, I just let them flow, you know. I don't sort of block anything. So
yeah,
it was, you know what, it was actually, and even now, you know, I've been on a show called Red Eye, but starting another book, and just that feeling of, it's, you know, a cup of coffee on a Sunday and I've got a chapter to write and I know what's going to happen. It's just brilliant. I love it. I love the creative process of just plotting a story.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, because whenever I act, which isn't very often, I'm like a small role, so I get a lot of time to sit around and I can work on something else. But when you're the main part in something, it must be a little bit harder to kind of to switch between, I guess, as well, because I know you're a very thorough actor, and I know that you, I mean, it's not quite method acting you're doing, is it? But you inhabit a character when you're working on a thing, so that must make that shift a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, I think it would be worse if I had, you know, weeks of nothing ahead of me. I actually think I would dry up. I think it's because I am trying to squeeze in a writing session where I've kind of got, I've got Monday morning, I can do something then. And I think the sort of excitement and urgency of this time to write is quite good for me. But I do spend a lot of time thinking and procrastinating before I actually write anything down. I think I do that with any role I'm doing. Once you've read a script and you've started to absorb the character, no matter what you do, you're marinating yourself in it in your head. And I'm doing that same thing with writing. So by the time I actually get to write something down, it's been really chewed over in my brain for quite a long time, which I like. Yeah. I like having a busy brain.
Yeah, but you know, but it is good. I like to have too much to do, and you do get a lot more done when you've got too much to do. But it's interesting that you can, because, you know, other people who listen to this who might want to write probably have another job. My wife started writing children's books in her lunch break when she was working on a reception somewhere. And, you know, you can use those times to find, you know, you find your time to write and you find your time to think. And I think that's very interesting, because it's easy to think, oh, I can't do this, I haven't got time.
Yeah.
But
most people I've met recently have day jobs, myself included. And you kind of think the day job gets in the way of the writing. I just met the gigantic Richard Osman on Saturday night. And I think he has actually given up the day job now to be a full-time writer. And he had a great day job as well. But it's really interesting how that disappearing into your story is probably more compelling than earning a daily crust, you know?
Yeah, that is interesting. And I think another interesting thing about Sarah that I did meant to mention was, obviously, because she has she's getting these neurological symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, and it means that the narrator of her part of the story is a kind of unreliable narrator, because she doesn't know for sure the things that, because she's hallucinating and, you know, she's seeing things that aren't there, so she doesn't. It's a very interesting thing to have that first person from someone who can't even trust their own, you know, experience of what's happening.
Yes, and that was something I got very excited about the prospect of, because initially I was trying to write what it feels like to be in a gaslit relationship, so that her husband would be very different as he communicated with the audience to how he was with her, just seeing this duplicity. But in a way, it gave away too much of his character early on. So I focused more on Sarah's warped sense of reality, which is going to be really useful when we do develop this into a visual TV, you know, into a sort of TV or film. Yeah. I think having that sense of disorientation is going to be exciting. And actually, one of the very loose inspirations for the book was a film I'd remembered from when I was a little kid, and I just couldn't remember the title of it, but it made the hair stand on end. And I had to Google "woman finds brother wallpapered over in hotel wall," and finally this film kind of came up, and it was a Gene Simmons movie called "So Long at the Fair," a period piece about a woman who is gaslit by these people into thinking that she's arrived in a hotel without her brother, and she's convinced that they've been traveling together. And I just it. I, I would go back and watch that film now, and it would still have that effect on me when everybody else is telling you, no, that didn't happen, you're going mad. And she's like, I am convinced this is the truth. I think that is the sort of brilliant definition of insanity, which is what happens to people with Alzheimer's, I think.
Yeah, no, I wondered whether, you know, we probably all experienced it with someone we know, but I wondered whether, you know, you'd been closer to it then, because it's so well explained, I think, that what both her father and she are going through. It's really interesting. And again, the book, you know, it feels so current because obviously it's about COVID. It's about being gaslit. I know that COVID's a couple of years ago, but it's all come together pretty quickly, I would assume, because it does feel kind of, you know, like it's...
Yeah, I did have to de-COVID the script a bit because when I first started writing, it was all about masks and COVID tests before you get on aeroplanes. And they did sort of say, you know, ease off on that because I think people are going to want to forget, and they were right. But certainly that kind of breakthrough Alzheimer's drug, which has just been kind of in the media, I forget what it's called, that I did think, gosh, this, there's a little wind of a zeitgeist blowing through, and the Elon Musk Neuralink, again, the trials are kind of becoming more published. And one of the things I hadn't realized that I'd done when I was writing it was imply that one of the characters had actually had Neuracell implanted, which is, again, is why I don't think I'm finished with the story, because I quite like the idea that somebody did get Neuracell implanted and was a guinea pig for this technology, purely because I want to know what that does to a person. You know, and you know, in my dream world, Charlie Brooker writes the pilot episode, because I love that thing he does with distorted reality and conspiracy. I think it would be a really cool thing to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, that's, you know, I think it's an interesting take on that, with, again, without giving too much away, in that, you know, that obviously some people will, what if this invention is there, some people will want to use it for bad purposes, but the inventor is actually fairly decent about it and wanting it to be used only for medical stuff rather than to create super soldiers or whatever.
Which is pretty much where every drug begins and then ends up as Viagra or, you know, OxyContin. You know.
Well, look, it is a really terrific book. I think people, you could see you sitting around the pool. Obviously, it's coming out now in the autumn, but you might be having an autumn holiday. It's a great, you could read this in a day, and I think it would transport you for a day, and there's lots to think about in it. So I do really recommend it. I'm very glad I've, you know, as I say, I don't think this is something I would have necessarily picked up without being offered it, but I'm very glad to have been offered it, because it's...
And listen, you must, if ever you travel to Geneva, you must go to the hotel that I wrote about, because I didn't name it for obvious reasons, but there is, you will find that bar in the basement. And I went back just at New Year because I was traveling to the Alps, and Geneva is a very useful hub to get to the Alps. But on the way back, some friends of mine, we kind of had cocktails in the bar, and some of the characters that you will see in that place are extraordinary. But it's the bar, the Leopard Bar, is a real place, and it's a great place to spend £30 on a cocktail.
Terrific. Well, we'll look out for that. I do ask everyone, you obviously read a lot of books for your job. Are there books that you are reading, maybe not for your job, but they can be, that you'd recommend to our listeners by other authors?
I am reading for my job. I'm reading the Sebastian Folk's Seventh Son.
Yeah.
I've just finished reading David Hewson, The Borgia Portrait. I love his writing, and it makes me want to go to Venice and eat amazing food. I've also just finished reading Joy Ellis's 10th Jackman and Evans novel called The River's Edge, because I've optioned Joy's work to develop into a crime series. We're not quite there yet, but she started tailoring the character to me, which is always interesting. See what she's doing with my role. But no, all of those books, and I've got a little stack of books waiting to be read. But it's one of the pleasures of my job, actually, is whenever I take on a character, I always find a few either biographies or novels to read in accordance. You know, I love it.
Yeah, and you've implied or heavily basically said you're working on another one in this series. Is the novel writing going to be something that continues, do you think?
Do you know what? I really felt like I didn't want to be a flash in the pan, and not just from a commercial point of view, but when I finished Geneva and it was going through the editing and the recording was done, I felt bereft of that thing I was doing on a Sunday morning with the coffee. And so I immediately said, I'd really love to write another one, and offered a follow-up to Geneva or something completely standalone. And I'm doing the same again, but with a story called The Cut, which is a little bit more about childhood, a little bit more personal, and about a crime that happens in a rural village, which is based on something that happened when I was a kid. But a different tone altogether. Right. But just, it's again, I'm loving every second of the process.
Brilliant. Oh, well, I'm so glad, and I will definitely check out the next book whenever it comes out, especially if it's on an audio book, especially if you get Nicola Walker in it again. She's very good.
Oh, she's amazing.
And it's a real pleasure to talk to you online, but hopefully we'll meet up.
Why weren't we there in person?
Yeah. Well, this is just how we do this one. This is always
remote. I've seen pictures of you hugging other people, though. I was like, oh, you didn't want to meet me.
I would love to meet you. We can come and do this. This is my serious podcast. The other one, I'll be cheeky and I'll talk about your bottom, which I said I wouldn't do in this one. But in the other one, I will. I know, but I said I wouldn't do it, and I haven't done it for your publicity.
No,
I wasn't going to do it. I didn't even know about it
right now. But
lovely to talk to you, Richard. And yes, hope you can come down and be in the other podcast anytime you like. And it's a bit.
Thank you so much. Where are you, by the way?
Well, I'm in my house in Hertfordshire now. Here, this is my attic.
Lovely. So do you write in an attic?
I sometimes do. It gets a bit hot up here. I'm getting a bit so. I tend to go wherever I'm feeling comfortable. But I'm not doing much writing at the moment. So I must. I'm talking to a lot of authors and thinking I must get back into trying to write something.
Do you know what I mean? It's like one sip of the drink again, and you're like, I'm going to go there. I'm going to sink the whole bottle. Do it.
I will. You've inspired me. I'm going to write about. Luzerne. I'm going to write a book called Luzerne. It's going to be a mess. I'll do a parody of your book.
A total parody. Yeah.
I can do that. I love to meet Richard. Thank you to Richard. Do go and buy Geneva. I love the audiobook, but it's now in book form as well, which is terrific. And thank you also to Chris Evans and Ben Evans for all their work behind the scenes. We'll be back next week. Cheers.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.